That's, nope, she's across the way. All right. The May 30th House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness is now in order. What? Oh, all right. Good. We're going to open a public hearing on SCR 19 Alpha. We're going to invite up Senator Lori Montes-Anderson and somebody who's going to be talking about the other part of the bill. Please come forward, state your name. Tell us what you'd like to tell us about SCR 19 Alpha.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Montes-Anderson representing Gresham, Trout, Delwood Village, and Fairview, and I am honored to speak about one of the fallen military men, Corporal Jeremy M. Lovelace. He was killed on Memorial Day, May 29th, 2006, and he was a Gresham High grad. And he said, has said to his dad, you know, I don't know what I want to be, but I know I want to help people. And during his short life, that's exactly what he did. Jeremy was all about outdoorsmen, outdoors. He didn't hunt, but he was a skilled marksman and outdoorsman. He was an instructor at ropes near Highway 26, which is why we chose that location for his memorial sign. He had various jobs, but soon in 2002, he married Melissa Valley and in 2000, and they had a daughter in 2002, and she was 4 years old when her daddy was killed. Basically, he was a medic. He was assigned to 10 separate platoons, and ordinarily, they're only assigned to one or two of them, but he was so good and so experienced that he was assigned to many of them, and he knew a lot, and he had a nickname of Doc. His father came to testify and is so sorry that he wasn't able to come today. One of the sergeants said that Jeremy, that he didn't need to tell Jeremy what to do. He always knew what to do. In fact, he should be instructing the sergeant. His father has a tattoo on his arm, and it says, all heart, all man. And so I want to just keep it brief, but I know that Chris Gorsuch has been following this, and I'm not sure if he's here to testify, but he is from our district. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for Senator Montes-Anderson? All right, sir. Are you Mr. Wiley, by chance?
It is.
Yes, sir. Could you please state your name and where you're from for the record? Thank you,
sir. My name's Steve Wiley. Uh-huh. I'm from Marion County. I'm representing Steve Bates today. He was unable to make it, and he asked me to attend in his absence. And I'd like to thank Chairman Evans, Vice Chair Esquivel, and the rest of the committee members for hearing me out. I appreciate it. I'm here to talk about the Evans Brothers Specialist 6, Norman Francis Evans and his brother, SP or Specialist David Lynn Evans. Over 58,000 American families became Vietnam War Gold Star families. Of these families, there were 39 that lost two sons in this war. Four of the 39 were from Oregon. The Rowden family of Jackson County, the Wright family of Clackamas County, the Evans family of Klamath County, and Johnson family of Lincoln County. During the last legislative session, the Wright brothers of Boring were appropriately honored for the loss of their two sons in Vietnam. Today, we wish to continue the process to honor the Evans family of Klamath County with SCR 19A. The Evans family story is interesting to say the least. The father, James Evans, married Juanita Malahone. Juanita had children from a previous marriage, and James accepted them as his own. The family had four boys, Robert, Norman, David, and John. The father, James, was a World War II and Korean War Air Force veteran. All four of the boys served in the U.S. Army. It must also be noted that his grandson served in the Oregon Army National Guard. This is a family that served its country well. David Lynn Evans enlisted in the Army shortly after graduating from high school in 1967. He achieved the rank of Specialist 4 and was a door gunner with the Army's 191st Assault Helicopter Company when he died outright during a hostile engagement October 24, 1968, at the age of 19. Norman Francis Evans also enlisted in the Army. He had two sons. The second was born 10 months after the death of his younger brother in Vietnam. Norman and his wife named their second son after Specialist 4 David Lynn Evans. Norman Evans did not have to go to Vietnam, and his brother, as his brother had served and died there. It is reported that Norman felt it was his duty and accepted his assignment to Vietnam. He died in an airplane crash that killed 16 people on November 24, 1970, at the age of 23. This was Norman's second tour in Vietnam, and he was just 3 weeks away from rotating and coming home. James and Juanita Evans raised a great family. They lost two of their boys in Vietnam. Unfortunately, the parents are now deceased. We wish to take time to honor their contribution and their memory. The only family survivor that we have located is the oldest son of Norman Evans, named Jeff. And Jeff Evans has a family of his own and resides in Nevada. His brother, who is a namesake of David Lynn Evans, passed away in 2011. David Lynn Evans served two tours of duty in Iraq. He was injured during his second tour, and those injuries contributed to his death. Jeff Evans has expressed his desire to be here, but is unable to do so because of employment responsibilities. We ask that this resolution be passed to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation. Let us honor the Evans family along with the Loveless family. This resolution, when passed, will enable the process for signage to honor Corporal Jeremy Loveless in Clackamas County. Adoption of this resolution will also enable the dedication of a state highway in Klamath County as a Fallen Hero Memorial Highway in memory of U.S. Army Specialist 4 David Lynn Evans and U.S. Army Specialist 6 Norman Francis Evans, two heroes that were brothers. They sacrificed their American dreams so that we could live ours. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Any questions for Mr. Wiley? Well, thank you very much for bringing forward this proposal, especially given that there aren't many part of the Evans family in that part of the state still here. So thank you very much for making sure their memories are not forgotten.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to close public hearing on SCR 19A. We're going to open a work session on SCR 19.
Mr. Chair, I think yesterday I had the opportunity to speak at several places. I spoke at the Veterans Park in Central Point, and I also spoke at the National Cemetery in Eagle Point. And I started thinking of the names that have gone through this committee, of the number that we have lost. And it's pretty humbling to have that happen to you, to see that. We have so many good men and women that have put their lives on the altar of freedom for this country, and I think that's what makes us such a great country.
Agreed. Thank you very much for that. Would you like to make a motion?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move SCR 19A to the floor with the be adopt recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves SCR 19A to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, Sky, please call the roll.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Excused.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. Motion passes. And is the sponsor Gorsuch? How about we co-Gorsuch and also Representative Esquivel because of the Klamath Falls part?
Okay.
Okay.
Be happy to.
All right. Thank you very much. We're going to open a work correction. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1000 Alpha.
It's from our committee.
Committee bill.
Then you're the chair. Okay. Senate Bill 1000A. Please give us a skinny on this.
Thank you, Chairman Evans.
Senate Bill 1000 Alpha authorizes creation of Volunteer Civil Defense Force under Department of State Police, the DPS, called Oregon State Police Civil Defense Force, describes its function, requires its volunteers and volunteers with county civil defense forces to possess certain qualifications, provides insulation from tort liability, distinguishes Oregon State Police Civil Defense Force from Oregon State Defense Force, and renames Oregon State Defense Force the Oregon State Police Civil Defense Force. Oregon law currently provides for the existence of volunteer civil defense forces that are distinct from but supplement the activities of professional first responders in the armed forces at both the state and local levels. At the local level, county volunteer forces answer to county sheriffs, and at the state level, the Oregon State Defense Forces answers to the Adjutant General of the Oregon Military Department. However, the Oregon State Defense Force has been suspended for some time. Senate Bill 1000A authorizes the Department of State Police to form the Oregon State Police Civil Defense Force. There was a no fiscal impact, no revenue impact. The vote in the Senate was 27 ayes, 3 excused.
Okay. Anybody coming forward to put forward this bill? Okay. Seeing none, the chair will use his discretion to keep my comments for the work session. My intention is to move the bill. This is a priority of Senator Boquist. And I'll explain the background during the work session, if that's acceptable. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1000A. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1000A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1000A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 1000A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? I'll start the discussion. The idea is that while the State Defense Force actually does exist. It's not suspended. It's a little bit different model than before. This bill is seeking to provide added capacity for state police and others, with an emphasis on state police. The rationale is for situations like we saw at the Malheur. There were opportunities that if volunteers had been credentialed, supported, trained in certain capacities, it could have theoretically taken some of the load off state police troopers actually doing those functions. It took troopers off the road. And that was really the main concern on this. There was an amendment, a Dash 1 amendment, that was not moved on the Senate side. For some reason, DPSST decided it was important that they send a letter to the committee regarding that. I'm going to emphasize DPSST was out of line in doing so because we're not considering that amendment. I will further say that the fact that DPSST sent that letter truly frustrates me, because it is one more time that they are continuing to, in my mind, thwart the opportunities of using federal dollars to help support their mission through a GI Bill approach. I am going to continue to have that conversation after the session, but sending a letter on an amendment we were not considering was just, in my opinion, starting a fight they didn't need to fight. But since the fight has started, it will continue. And I want to make sure that the members of the committee understand that there will be a consequence for that letter being a part of this discussion. So, having any other comments? Go ahead.
I do have a comment. I want to take this time. You mentioned about taking police off the street, which is our state police. But I do want to remind everyone in this building, I've been very unsuccessful throughout my career. I've been trying to get dedicated funding for the state police. Back in 1976, the state police had just about 700 officers. Today, they have about 350. So we've cut that force in half and not funded it properly, and it's our responsibility to do so, and I would hope that after I'm gone out of this process, that you carry on that ambition and get them dedicated funding, but more importantly, get their numbers up to at least where they were in 1976.
I would like to follow on to that, that not only is the reduction in force a problem, but also in Josephine County, for example, at least until very recently, there were as many state police troopers in the Josephine County area as there were for the Capital Region because of necessity, and that the ongoing activities in parts of the state because of the lack of sufficient public safety infrastructure really has put a lot of our officers at undue risk. And this bill is designed to provide a Band-Aid, mm-hmm. not a solution, but a Band-Aid, to try to help that. Mm-hmm. But I think the point of at least getting back up to parity what it was two decades ago is a pretty good plan. Mm-hmm.
Any other? It's 4 decades ago.
4 decades ago. Any other comments? Yes, sir.
Just a question, Mr. Chair. I know a couple of people that were in the Oregon State Defense Force, a retired Command Sergeant Major and a retired Major. So my question is that, if I understood you correctly, the original organization still exists, and it's so are these people being incorporated into the new structure, and are they will they have the same mission, or is the mission changing?
Representative Lewis, as I understand it, the mission of the State Defense Force is not so much different as it's being tailored to the delivery systems that the Guard now has. Many of the people were invited to be involved in the reconstituted force. I don't know if everybody was. I also know that there was a shift in leadership. One Adjutant General back, not this Adjutant General, but his predecessor, that I think everybody involved could say that the transition could have been handled a little more gracefully and a little more carefully. What I understand from the department, though, is that there is a continuing mission and importance for a State Defense Force. It's probably going to be smaller. It's probably going to be focused on a few things as opposed to what it once was. But as far as any one individual's involvement, I don't know. We can certainly bring them up, or we can talk about that offline if you'd prefer.
That answered my question. Thank you.
But I believe that no organization in the state, moving forward with our budgetary constraints, can operate effectively without some kind of volunteer support system. And I've been assured that they're going to try to maximize that.
Thank you.
Other questions? All right. Sky, let's call the vote.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Blackwood.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. And I will carry the bill. All right. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 832 Alpha. Bradley, please explain the bill.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 832 Alpha directs the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee to advise the Legislative Assembly by February 1st, 2018 on the merits of requiring ODVA to establish a grant program in cooperation with the Veterans Health Administration Office of Rural Health to solicit qualified nonprofit providers to assist rural veterans with access to health care, veterans benefits, housing, transportation, and court processes. Veterans health care benefits are provided through the Federal Veterans Administration. The VA sites its main hospital facilities and population centers, which can negatively impact access to care for those veterans who live in rural areas. The Veterans Health Administration Office, or Rural Health, exists to increase access for veterans in rural areas who rely on VA for health care. Programs like Veterans Choice have been implemented to address the needs of rural veterans, but criticism persists, particularly with regard to eligibility requirements and administrative bureaucracy.
Rural veterans overall, especially as they age, experience difficulty with access to all manner of assistance, not just access to health care. Senate Bill 832A requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, the ODVA, Advisory Committee to make recommendations to the Legislative Assembly by February 1st, 2018 on the merits of requiring ODVA to establish a grant program in cooperation with the ORH, the Oregon Rural Health Authority, to solicit qualified nonprofit providers to assist rural veterans with access to health care, veterans benefits, housing, transportation, and core processes. The fiscal was a minimal fiscal impact. There was no revenue impact, has minimal revenue impact. The ayes were 29 in the Senate with one excused.
And before we get into the public hearing part, just a truth in advertising, I'm hoping to move the bill as it is. I know that there was talk of an amendment, but after conversations with the director, the authority already exists. So, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And Senate Bill, I think the intent behind Senate Bill 832 is certainly accurate. For a large state like Oregon, it is challenging for our rural veterans to access what is largely that VA healthcare system, and a lot of strategies that we can bring to bear on that. I would just remind, in its current form, it is in a study and review and asking the advisory committee to review whether a specific grant program for rural and for healthcare access would be appropriate. We've also had a bill, House Bill 2891, championed by this committee, and again, tapping into that ethos that Measure 96 lottery dollars weren't solely for county VSOs and state efforts and ODVA as a state agency, but how do we get some of these funds to community partners, nonprofits, service organizations? That broader concept of House Bill 2891 that was moved out of this committee as a community partner grant program with advice from the advisory committee had a broad and is currently in Ways and Means, and I think has some traction politically to put some budgetary resources behind it, has broad authority, not just for access to mental health care and health care, but other grant opportunities across education, workforce training, supporting service organizations, housing. It's really the broader opportunity for a grant program. But we would certainly be willing to study if a rural specific is necessary as well.
So just to confirm, if 832 passes and the House bill pass, they're not in conflict?
Correct. So, I mean, 832 is simply asking the advisory committee to review more specifically for a grant program for rural health care access. Would not necessarily go to Ways and Means, would not have a fiscal, whereas House Bill 2891 would have a broader fiscal, both for the grants and any implementation, and working that through Ways and Means now.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for the director before we go to Mr. Clute? Mr. Clute, you're next up.
Chair Evans, Vice Chair of Committee, for the record, Bill Clute, Carpenters Industrial Council. Any bill for veterans has got rural tack in it. I like them. We've done a lot. But boy, we've missed a lot too. We're still not getting a fair shake. A good example is the town of Pendleton had a very good mental health evaluation clinic. It functioned well for years, but it got cut out in Ways and Means one year, done away with. Representative Jensen was in tears fighting for that. Representative Smith was right behind him, and it still got cut. That hurts. I got 4,000 members in this state, and all of them are in rural Oregon. A good bill that I don't think it's going to make it over here, a very good bill, Senate Bill 1054, come out of the Senate Veterans Committee, 4-0. Even the Senate President voted for it. Where's it at now? Rules. I don't think it'll ever come out of rules. I looked down through the people that was against it. What this 1054 is a opened up some psychiatric beds in this state for our veterans. We all know where Oregon ranks in this nation for suicide. We got a major problem. I thought this might be the key, but it's hung up in rules on the Senate side. I won't mention who the opponents were, but if you scan down through the testimony, to tell you the truth, I was shocked. I've been a union person for 53 years. I've been in this building since 2000, and I never thought I'd see the people fight this that are fighting it today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And before the panel leaves, I just want to, for the committee, I know this weekend was hard on both a personal level as well as a professional. Memorial Day, I think, is supposed to be hard. I think it's supposed to bring forth the things you try not to think about all the time. But I want to commend publicly both the presentation and his own comments. Director Smith outdid himself this year in his comments at the Iraq-Afghan Memorial. And I think in talking with people afterwards, made some statements about the importance of the day that made some people uncomfortable enough that they started questioning past behaviors. And I think you should be commended for that. So I just want to say thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 832 Alpha. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 832 Alpha.
Now, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 832A as an alpha to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves Senate Bill 832A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion about this? Sky, please call the roll.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Escobar.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. And unanimous. Everybody here all the time.
Yeah.
It's a yes. The measure passes. Who would like to carry this particular measure? Anybody? Anybody?
You want me to carry it as well?
Representative Escobar volunteers. Representative Escobar will carry the
dupes.
No, it's fine. It's
fine. You the whole time. Because I'm
thank
carrying
you.
One. He's carrying
I
one.
Can feel
Representative
it.
Lewis. Representative Lewis, do it. Thank you, Representative Lewis. I appreciate that very much.
Deb missed the bill, didn't she?
Yeah, can we vote on
it? Didn't pass the vote. Representative Boone missed one of the votes.
Yep. So Representative Meek is asking to suspend the rules. We're going to open a public hearing.
Public hearing. He does need to get in at least two or three votes.
We're going to open a work session on SCR 19A so that Representative Boone may vote. How do you vote on SCR A?
Aye.
19A?
Thank you.
She votes aye on SCR 19A. We're going to close the public and close the work session on SCR 19A. Were you here for 1,000? She was here for the. Okay. All right, so one last bit of business before we go. Next committee is the last to move things forward. And I truly want. We try to do things in this committee by consensus, and I actually believe in that. So I'd like you to look at Senate Bill 143A. There is an amendment that the work group put together. There is the option of passing it as it came to us without fiddling with it. And then there's the request by Senator Monta Sanderson, that there was another amendment drafted for that. For reverting back to the original bill, okay? It's ODVA, I think I can say this with relative certainty, that the original bill and the workgroup bill are relatively similar from ODVA's perspective. There's a little bit of tweaking either way, but they're relatively similar. The big difference, and this is a policy choice, and this is why I want to make sure everybody's cool with which direction we go on. If we go with the bill that was passed to us by the Senate, it's yet another study that the advisory committee can do. What we tried to do, and what we have suggested all along in the budgetary process, that even though Our goal is to send a number of different projects through the grant process for the advisory committee. The Campus Veteran Services program is a little different because they're already up at certain institutions throughout the state. So if there was a way to both have a study about best practices and to supply a little money down range to schools that are already doing things and to incentivize those that want to, we can kind of have our cake and eat it too. That was the goal of the work group. The goal of the study, if the way the bill came to us, would not do that necessarily. Wouldn't get in the way. It just wouldn't necessarily set aside direct funds for it. We have been in discussion with the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee. The money for the campus vets is not in the same pool as the grants for these other projects that we're talking about. So, again, I recommend that we look at those three options, the bill as it came to us, the bill as amended with the work group work, and if you want, because I want to make sure that Senator Montes Anderson is heard in our conversation, she would prefer that we go back to what is essentially the original language. My view is this. This committee makes best decisions through consensus. I want you to look at all of them, compare them, think about them. We should have a chart over the next day or so that Bradley's going to provide to us that basically goes piece by piece. But on Thursday, what I'd like to do is get to a unanimous decision that we either send to Ways and Means, or if we go with the bill as it came to us, we send to the floor. But we are one voice on this, because there's going to be enough confusing things over the next several days that I'd like to make sure we have a singular voice. Is that acceptable? Yeah. Mr. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, when you say it's a different pot of money, is that a problem?
No.
There's no problem with allocation from the vets?
Right, here's it. Great. There was confusion. There was confusion by Senator Boquist, and again, it wasn't his fault. It was there was a problem in communication. Senator Boquist, in some, thought that Senate Bill 143 with our amendments would basically dip into the same money that we're trying to set aside for the advisory committee grant programs, and that would basically eat up of the $2 million that we're trying to put in there. It'd eat up $1.5 million or so. That's not the deal. The campus veterans money, up to $1 million, maybe less, is a separate stream, separate money set aside from the things that we're trying to do as pilot programs. Okay? So once that got cleared up, I think everything got a little bit better. But I truly want to go with what you all think is the best tool for this particular issue. All right? Okay. Any other issues before us, before we conclude for the day? Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to see from the members of this committee if there is a willingness to put together some kind of letter to try to help pop Senate Bill 1054 out of the Senate Rules Committee, where should not be. If you had four members, it doesn't cost money. There's no should be no fiscal on it, and you have four members of the Senate support it. So I'm not still trying to wrap my head around why that bill hasn't come out and come over to us in time for us to be able to give it our consideration. I actually find that pretty offensive, because if it does pop out at this point, if it pops out and gets voted on, we won't ever get to hear it. It'll go down to the Senate or House Rules Committee, where maybe some of our folks down there don't understand these issues as well. So I'm a little frustrated that that bill is parked down there. And, you know, particularly in light of yesterday, I think most of us went to some sort of event yesterday. And, you know, I thought long and hard about what I wanted to say. And especially when you get asked to go to the same, you know, location year after year in your district, you know, you want to make things sure that things are current. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me about all of this post 9/11, in that I've got two children who've never known a day that we have not been at war. Two of my kids, they got born into this and got raised in it. And to me, that is just absolutely frustrating. And, you know, we fight war differently. When you look at all the, you know, going through doing your Memorial Day research, and you see how many hundreds of thousands of people we lost in a World War One or World War Two, and you get into 16 years and 7,000 people, it's the tools of war are different. And what's also different is when we have asked people to come back and go through this multiple times, you know, we don't leave people behind much on the battlefield anymore, but they are POWs when they get here, as far as I'm concerned. The mental illness, the level of incarceration, the trauma that these folks experience, is we do it right here on our own soil. We don't have to ask them to get left behind in some theater of war when they're suffering here in our own country because we are failing to serve their needs. It's the worst type of prison when it's happening in your own backyard. And so I would hope that this our side of the aisle and on the chambers would be willing to all put on a letter that we'd like to see 1054 get to our House floor before the end of this session.
Into that point, on Thursday, we'll have just a couple of bills, but I want to talk about one real quick. Senate Bill 129A, which has to do with a study for post-traumatic stress. While I don't want the entire committee to be focused on 1054, I don't think it would be inappropriate for people that support 1054, which supports more mental health capabilities for veterans, to come in and certainly be a part of that testimony if they wanted to. So I'd make that invitation available.
Well, and I appreciate that. I'll just follow up. You know, a parallel conversation we're having in this building right now is what we do on the justice reinvestment side and the high cost of what it is to, you know, house people in our prison system. And we heard testimony from Marion County Judge the other day about how well their veterans court is working. And I asked specifically the question about, okay, well, where are you sending folks? And they said Cedar Hills, which is the group that wants to, you know, continue to expand their work on the mental health front and is being denied by the state. We have, since I've been here, had a goal to see veterans court stood up in all 36 counties. That doesn't work when our only mental health is in two or three locations in the state. So if we want to have veterans courts in 36 counties, then we need facilities and beds in those counties that solve those needs. And so, you know, it's part of a certainly a bigger conversation about if we're just going to keep incarcerating veterans instead of working with them and trying to help them through, you know, the other issues that help maybe lead to their incarceration. So after yesterday, I'm a little frustrated by what's going on in this building. And here we are once again and seeing people play games with veterans bills. And I'm not liking that.
Well, we will see what we can do.
Thank you.
On Thursday, we have four bills. Senate Bill 81, Senate Bill 143A, Senate Bill 166A, Senate Bill 129A. Again, I ask the committee to please review for 143A, so we have one voice, one mission on that. Without any other comments, we're
is
going
that
to...
like being in cadence, in step and cadence?
Yeah, in cadence, exactly. That's right. We are adjourned. That's right. We are adjourned. Cadence, exactly.